Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 90 Day Fiancé Rehab-Ups podcast, where we get on the Hot Mess Express. We talk about all the nonsense that is 90 Day Fiancé. I am your host and conductor, Priya Zanvakili. And with me today, I have two lovely guests making their debut on the network, part of the RHAP class of 2020. First, I'd like to welcome Mina Woodard. Mina, how are you doing today?
I am fantastic. I'm just setting my mind up for this podcast, and I'm just so ready to talk about 90 Day Fiancé.
It's going to be a great time. And of course, I've got someone else here with me. It's Jason Reed. Jason, how are you doing today, my man?
Hey, Puy, I'm doing great. Excited to make my RHAP debut and ready to talk about some hot messes.
Oh, yeah. And with this show, there's plenty. So you know we're going to get into it. It's going to be a good time. So first and foremost, the way we're going to do it today, this is the first time we're following the new format or what will be the proper format, because we're going to be talking about two shows today. We're going to be talking about Happily Ever After, and we're going to be talking about The Other Way, and we're talking about the latest episodes. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about Happily Ever After first, because that one is the bigger one. There's more. It's a longer runtime. There's more couples discussed there specifically this week as well. So we're going to go through couple by couple. We're going to talk about them. We're going to speak our piece, and then we'll move over to The Other Way and we'll finish off over there. So I would like to open the doors here, give the honors to Mina to pick your first couple from Happily Ever After that you want to discuss today.
Ooh, I get my pick of the litter. Let's see. Do we start with, the episode started off with Larissa and Eric. So do we start with them?
Sure. I mean, that's a good one to start with because we get to also talk about Colt and Jess. So that's like a quick doubleheader too. So take it away. Awesome. What do you want to talk about with Larissa here?
So in this first scene, we see her and Eric get into this really big argument about what she found out from Natalie on the phone, which was that Eric shared some very intimate details about her. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like in this scene, we kind of see, because we've seen Eric on the show, I think, a couple times, but we haven't really gotten to know him at all because he's just kind of been like attached to Larissa and just in the background. But like here we kind of see, like, I don't want to say like his true colors, but like a little bit of like how he is. And like this argument was not the greatest, and it was kind of just ridiculous all around, kind of from both sides really, but just from him it was just completely ridiculous.
Yeah, so to recap what we saw last week, which brought us into this episode, Larissa contacted this woman Natalie, who Eric had been seeing or had seen at some point, and she disclosed a bunch of information about things that Eric had said about her to Natalie. So there was talk about some intimacy stuff, specific like sexual stuff, basically giving up that privacy information to Natalie, who he barely knew. And through Natalie finds out that he was bad mouthing her throughout the time. So Jason, here's where we talk about this. So I think I also agree with Mina in that Eric, this is his true colors. This is the reason they broke up is all this nonsense that we're seeing. Now, what I want to know specifically from you is, do you think Larissa had the right to do this based on the reasoning she gave, which is, this is technically my phone that I lent you, so it's my phone?
She totally had the right. She gave him the phone. That's her phone. She paid for it. Now, depending on who is paying for the service, whether or not they have a legal right, she has legal right to take his phone, I don't know. Like you said, he showed his true colors today, and those true colors were, he's a psycho. Like,
yeah,
he's insane. And this fight is fantastic. Like, you know, she's talking to Natalie. He walks in and she's like, oh, well, I have to hang out, which, you know, I guess she meant hang up. But then mm-hmm. he comes in and, like, you know, she starts the conversation out. He's like drinking something out of a blender. I don't know. It looked like he had a big ass blender he was drinking out of. And so she starts to talk to him about it. And he's like, you're digging up the dead. And then I would also like to know what his issue with Dolly Parton is.
Oh, my God.
Why he hates Dolly Parton and why he thinks that Larissa's acting like Dolly Parton.
Yeah. Walking in your robe. Like, yeah, I like that. The biggest thing that Larissa took umbrage with was, how dare you talk smack about my intimacy with you. My face is $10,000.
$10,000, baby. And I don't know who she paid that $10,000 to, but I don't know. She might want to get a partial refund. I don't know.
So then,
I don't think she actually paid for it herself, even, because like I always question on this show these people's like financial situations.
Yes.
They also have like money left and right, which like, I mean, kind of like breaking the fourth wall. They do get paid to be on the show, so like they do have some money from that. But they like all of a sudden just like, well, like Larissa's case has like a bit of like a, if you want to say like a glow up, and then like they all are just able to go on all these like extravagant vacations and stuff. And it always just makes me, so when she says things like, "Oh, I spent $10,000 on this face," it's like, I don't really feel it, because I know you didn't really spend the $10,000, and like, you've looked fine before. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I not only question her financial situation, I question what she thinks Eric's financial situation is. Because the other episode she was talking about, like, you're so cheap, you don't spend any money on me. So I kind of thought, I don't know what Eric does. I thought he maybe had some money. But looking at, like, this house and, like, he has a roommate, weirdo David. So I don't know what she thinks that his financial situation is or what his financial situation actually is. Yeah. I think there might be a discrepancy there.
Yeah, I don't quite. Like, so the thing is, you are absolutely right, Mina. They do get paid to be on the show. There is, and I don't know if this is still the figure. I remember looking it up. It was like $2,500 per episode per couple. But obviously, the American gets paid though, because the American is the one that can legally get paid, unless like they've got the work permit stuff sorted. Which in the Happily Ever After franchise, they definitely do, because they've been in America long enough that they have the documents now. Whereas like in the other shows, because they're coming in, they don't really have work permits, so they can't get paid. So the American gets paid. But I do think there's discrepancies. I do think that there's money coming from elsewhere. And here's the thing. If you're doubting Eric-y for being a cheapskate, maybe look at the fact that he's on your cell phone plan.
Yes.
And he can't afford his own, as the first issue of like, this man is not going to be able to provide for me. And he has this roommate, David, who is just the biggest mystery to me, because later on we'll talk about this. Actually, we can, because we're talking about them now. Later on, she gets a call from David's phone from Eric-y, and David's basically the messenger being like, Eric's not happy that he doesn't have his phone, and he might call the cops on you for this.
Well, he turns into an amateur lawyer, you know, on the phone. Yeah. Defamation lawsuits and whatever. It's like, what?
Yeah, I had no idea what he was talking about there. Like, that's like defamation and phone. Like, what are you talking about? Like, the fact that she's talking about the phone that was, it makes no sense. Like, and the fact that they're like all meaning like Eric and his roommate, they're like threatening calling the police on about this phone situation. And that's just not cool, especially with Larissa and her already like pending legal troubles. So like, they're all just not great with this whole situation.
So what do you think the situation is? Who's at the cliffhanger we get is, who is at the door? Like, I want to think it's like Carmen's neighbor or something, or like a producer knocking on the door, like to make fake drama.
Yeah.
Yeah. They make it seem like it's like a, like the SWAT team is like outside or something. And like they're coming to get her. And it's like, it's probably like the most innocent. It's probably some Girl Scout selling cookies or something. Like it's probably nothing major.
I don't like any of the last scene before the show ends, because it's always a fake out. It's like, oh my God, next week's going to be amazing. And then it had nothing to do with the way they edited it. Nothing seems the way it is. I think it's going to be nobody as well. And so this is the problem. I feel like all the proof in the world right now is, hey, Larissa, you went back to Eric-y because you missed, or you were jealous of Colt and his situation. And now you've realized quickly that this was a mistake. Your roommate was right. Your friend was right. And now you're going back, and you shouldn't stay with him. Because here's the thing. The biggest thing to come out of that argument at the start of the episode was Larissa was like, he needs to apologize to me in her confessional. And he's like, she needs to apologize to me. So they're never going to work out at this point. He's always going to use this, I'm going to call the cops if you're going to be like this on her, because it'll work, because she's obviously not trying to get deported. So that's not a good look at all. And like financially, he's not where she wants him to be. He doesn't have that prowess that she's looking for. So this is a, y'all got to break up. And if Colt is the reason you're together, that's even the worst thing potentially out of all of this. I don't like any of it.
The fact that Colt and Colty and Eric-y got together and were hanging out in the first place would tell me that I don't need to hang out with Eric-y at all.
Like, never.
That's no. Like the worst like meeting of the minds ever. Like, it makes me just
they go, just talk about football or something like they do.
But, sports, just guy stuff. Just sports.
Yeah, guy stuff, you know. No, and then the thing that also was very distracting during this like whole Eric argument is like Eric is talking with his hands like in an extreme rate, and it's like very frightening. Like it's very true.
It was crazy.
Like he looked like he was about to like start hitting himself or something. Like it was just Eric. I feel like we don't know much about him, but like the stuff that we do know isn't really that great. So I don't really want to know more about him. Mm-hmm. And I want him and Larissa just to be done. And I feel bad for Larissa. I kind of, out of all these trashy people on the show, I feel like Larissa is probably one of my favorites just because she's like so honest about what she wants, even though it's probably not ideal all the time. And like, I just feel bad that like she's come to America and like she first had to live with Colt and Debbie and like in the domestic violence 3 times, they called the cops on her and just an awful situation. And then she starts dating Eric, who also is not great. And then she lives with Carmen and then starts dating Eric again, probably because she's like lonely and like her whole idea of America is like, oh, I got to find this guy that's going to take care of me and like supply what I need and buy me what I want and make my face worth $20,000 now. And like, it's just, I don't know. I would love if Larissa, just if Carmen's willing to accept her back, just live with Carmen for a little bit, like take a chill pill, stay away from all these bad guys. Don't go back to Eric or Cole. And just please, like, move on. Focus on getting your kids from Brazil to America. Like, that should be a goal. And maybe, like, work on your legal issues and getting those resolved. She just has a lot going on right now, and these guys do not make it better for her.
I think you're being a little too kind to Larissa. Because I think Larissa has brought what she's getting onto herself a little bit. And I did feel bad for Larissa this episode. And I hated the fact that I felt bad for her this episode because everything else I've seen from her is like, you deserve what you're getting right now. Like, I don't think she has any real intention of getting her kids from Brazil. I think she's happy in America, living her, you know, what she might think is a lavish life or what she wants to be a lavish life.
To be fair, I don't think she's a great person. I just think that can like to other people she might not be as terrible, and I like to give her the benefit of the doubt a little bit just so I can be a little bit optimistic about the show. But yeah, Sienna, like I think for me it's more of like a the moment where she stood on Debbie and Colt's stairs and yelled out, "Who is against the queen will die." That is very much I felt that. Like I felt her emotions there, and I feel like I've just related to her ever since. And yes, she does a lot of terrible things, and she probably doesn't care about her kids coming here that much. But, you know, until she says it, I am just going to let her slide by and not put her on the bottom of my list.
Fair enough. Fair.
Yeah, I do think that ultimately I'm kind of in the middle where I probably lean towards Jason in saying that she brings it on herself. But I do agree with you, Mina, and I've not really thought about this before, that the fact that she's very honest about what she wants, even if it's not the best thing in the world to want or to like want to do, she's very honest and forthcoming about that, which I do appreciate, because in this show, we know that there's always more meanings than what is being said on the surface. And this is the perfect segue to talk about Colt and Jess in Brazil. So, Jason, you want to take this away? You have a very big reaction to that.
5 oofs for Colt. I can't stand this man. Like, if you want to call him that, this boy, this little boy.
Man boy.
Yeah.
This baby boy.
And like, the thing is, like, I watched the show with my wife, and we have like a little drinking game. Like, every time Cole touches his glasses and readjusts his glasses, you take a drink. Like, it's like 10 times an episode, and it drives me nuts. That's like one of the least things that drives me nuts about him, but it's crazy the way he adjusts his glasses, and he just thinks so highly of himself. Mm-hmm. He drives me crazy.
The adjusting of the glasses every time, it makes me want to like punch my TV every single time. I can't.
Yeah. I think he knows it's a thing now, so he does it all the time.
Yeah.
For Colt, like, it's, you know, it's very predictable. I feel like Colt and his cast of characters on his side of the show are like, you know, rejects from the Jerry Springer show. Like, it feels very produced. You can kind of see what's coming, you know, and just all of that. Like, you want me to go through like what happens with him and everything?
Yeah, sure. Go for it. Go. You want to talk about like him and Debbie going to see the parents and everything?
Yeah, I'll just take it from the top with him. Like, yeah, go for it. You know, they go to Jess's family's house and, you know, Jess comes out and it's just all nice to Debbie. Like, and that's a big thing on this show. I think if time passes and they have arguments, they just kind of seemingly wash away and it never happened with a lot of these people. But Debbie kind of calls it out. She's like, oh, it's like nothing ever happened. Like, you know. And then right on cue, you get Colt taking Jess's father to the side, just as you would have saw coming, like you knew it was coming. Mm-hmm. And he uses his phone to translate, you know, he's using text and not really voice like Ji-hoon and Devin, which probably works out a little better. And
more,
you know,
discreet.
And you get the father saying, you know, as long as you treat her right, you know, he's fine with it. Which, you know, not a great endorsement, but okay.
That's fine.
And it's so funny, like, in the background of him talking to Jess's father, you can see Debbie, like, just, like, trying to look and see what they're doing. Like,
I'm,
you know,
telling you, Jason, like, I said this last week, Detective Debbie is my favorite story. Like, literally this entire episode, she's trifling, man. She's trying to figure out, how can I break these two up? And every single thing that Jess says, she uses against Jess. So when they were in the car on the way to the airport or on the way to the hotel, the whole thing with, like, she was sad, like, Jess is sad. She's going to say about her parents. And she's like, I'm not probably going to not see them for like 9-10 months, maybe a year. And Debbie's like, wait, didn't your visa expire in 6 months? How are you going to be in the States?
It's like, Detective Debbie,
none of your business, Debbie. But like, I like how attentive you are. Her mission in life is, Colt is mine and no one can get in between her and her son, because that's clearly what this is. Mina, what do you think of the Colt and Debbie of it all?
Oh, the relationship is clearly just totally normal. There's nothing wrong with it. No, I mean, it's they're very alarming. I don't know how to feel about the relationship, just because, like, the way Debbie reacts to everything, it's like, it's not a mom reacting, but, like, it's not necessarily like how, like, a girlfriend or something would react. It's kind of like in between, which is why it's like so alarming, because it's like, where are you going with this, Debbie? Like, are you trying to be a protective mother, or is something else that everybody's thinking? So, yeah, I mean, Debbie, the whole time when she's asking, like, what are you going to do when the 6 months is over? Are you supposed to go back? It's like, all right, Debbie, like, you didn't know, like, we're down here in Brazil. Like, clearly this is like a thing. They're not just going to like be dumb with each other when her visa ends. Like, what do you think is going to happen? And like, Colt has clearly, he did the same exact thing pretty much with Larissa. In the last episode, he was talking about how, like, they only were together for like 6 months before he proposed, I think he said. So, like, he's used to these kind of like expedited relationships. So I don't know. And I hate that they're constantly comparing Jess to Larissa, because they're not the same people. Like, just because they both come from Brazil, like, doesn't mean that they're the same in the slightest. I mean, we never met Larissa's family, I don't think, besides like her Skyping her dad. So, like, I don't know. It just seems like Jess just seems like a decent person to some extent. I mean, she's with Colt, so her decision making is a little questionable, but like, and her family seems kind of grounded. They gave presents.
Super nice. I love the family.
Yeah. And like, my question was, like, when Colt and Debbie and Jess go to say bye to her family, like, they give gifts to Colt and Debbie, but did Colt and Debbie bring gifts for them at all? Because if Colt is here to try to like impress Jess's family, like, wouldn't he think to like bring something for them? Or I don't know.
Colt's presence is enough of a gift, okay?
right. Yeah, he's like, I blessed you already, sorry. Yeah. But, yeah, I know. It just seems a little like, Colt and Debbie are very, very like about themselves. Jess is like, you can tell from her family that she seems like a more well-rounded person. And we don't know her well enough, obviously, but she does not seem to be on the same level as Colt and Debbie. But as we see later on, they just think that she's wrong about everything, even though they have no basis for that.
Yeah, I think ultimately the biggest problem with them is that Debbie is doing a one-for-one comparison with Larissa just based on both Brazilian, both have ulterior motives to my son. They just want him for the green card. And I mean, like, just at some point, I start thinking, how little do you think of your son that you think he's just a vehicle for a green card? Like, give it, maybe if you believe in him, maybe he's a loving person that they want to spend their life with.
That's that's what he's being.
He's such a peach. Oh man. So then Debbie realizes that this isn't going to go her way. Especially when she starts talking about, like, what did you talk about with her dad? And it's like, oh, just sports guy stuff. I was like, you don't talk about football. Don't even trip. They get to the hotel and Debbie's like, you know what? I need to use my ace in the hole. She calls up Vanessa, who is Colt's friend. We know Colt's had a bit of a thing for in the past, and she's cat sitting. And here's my thing, right? So I moved about 4 months ago. I gave my cat Winston to my sister to take care of. My cat's fine. Cats are like the least stakes when taking care of a pet. If you leave them food, a litter box, and water, they are fine. They don't even want to see you. So Debbie calling to check on the cats is like the biggest like stretch for I need to do this. It's straight up, I'm doing this to set off Jess. This is what's happening. Mina, do you agree?
I do. I feel like I think when they went to Brazil, they saw that Debbie had never really traveled before. So that might be why she's so concerned. And also, I don't know how many cats they have at this point, but I know, like, since they were on the first time, their number of cats has definitely increased exponentially. So I definitely think, though, that this is not the first time that Debbie has called to check up on the cats. It's probably just the first time that they recorded it and made it a big scene with Jess and everything. But it's clear, like, when she pretty much immediately tells Colt and Jess, oh, yeah, I called Vanessa and the cats are good. It's like, okay.
The Debbie, worst acting job ever.
Yeah. It's not subtle at all.
Right. Right. She could have said, like, I called the cat sitter and they're good. No, I called Vanessa. You know, Vanessa, the one that Colt said that he wouldn't talk to anymore. I called her and she said that the cats are good. Like, that's pretty much what she should have said.
What I'm most excited for next episode, Jason, which we got on the preview, is Jess storming into the room and throwing shoes at Colt. That is the scene I'm waiting for next week.
That is the Jerry Springer of it all right there. That's what I'm talking about. And then, and you can just tell from the preview, like, it just all looks so set up. Like, she storms in, she throws her shoes at him. He tries to dodge her shoes, you know?
Yeah. It's there's just something so, like, with Colt that screams, we need TV time. And these are our antics. Cause I almost don't, like, I want to let myself believe that Detective Debbie is a thing, but I also feel like they were on another season. They've definitely seen the feedback. They know what people think of them. So I'm like,
pros now.
Yeah. Debbie knows exactly what she's doing. She's like, they think I love my son and I want him for myself. Well, game on. I'm going to do exactly that again. So
when you see that, like, when the producers ask her, like, so did you know that Jess had a problem with Vanessa? And just the way she looks at the camera, she's like, maybe. Like,
I'm looking forward to the memes about that, because I know that's going to be meme. That's going to be clipped. I need those memes. I need the Debbie memes. That's what I'm here for.
I'm done.
Right. Just the way that, like, Colt and Debbie, like, they basically started tag teaming Jess at one point. Like, you know, Debbie questions her trust in Colt, and Colt says, yeah, I don't think you trust me, Jess. Well, gee, Colt, I wonder why. Like, you lied to her and said you wouldn't talk to Vanessa anymore, and that's what you're doing.
Yeah, well, last week, that happened where, not last week maybe, but literally Colt was on Jess's side. Debbie got 20 minutes alone with Colt, and Colt was brainwashed into the Debbie mindset again.
Well, it's whoever he talks to last. That's the side he's on. And then once he talks to somebody else, he's on their side. He has no mind of his own.
No, he'd be the easiest person to mold in a reality TV competition game. Easily get a number on your side. But It's your number now, Jason. It's your turn. Who do you want to nominate to talk about next from the Happily Ever After side? Which couple do you want to talk about?
Let's go with Kalani and Asuelu.
Let's do it. So take it away. Where are we at with them? What do you think of them? Let's go.
You know, you guys said it on your beginning recap. Asuelu has the mentality of a 5 to 14-year-old.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so nuts. One of my favorite scenes from recent episodes is when he's getting on that bus to escape.
Oh, man.
He gets on the bus. He like, hurriedly takes off his microphone. He gets on the bus and starts running down the bus aisle like a 5-year-old literally running away from home.
Yeah.
And but first, he's like, I'm with her. I'm with the bus driver, with her.
But just he just books it down the bus aisle. Like, I got to run away on this bus. It's just like, it was so crazy. And the fact that the producers can't even keep track of him and can't even, like, because he basically just dipped and was just like, I'm out of here without telling anybody. Like, producers like, where did he go? Like, he just dipped. Like, just like a 5-year-old.
Like, I would love to see, like, what happened to him on that day. Like, follow his journey.
Yeah.
Like, did he go to a bus station? Like, what happened?
That'd be fantastic. But in this episode, like, when they you know, go to that Samoan store, and he's just like a kid. Like, he's picking up stuff. He doesn't care what it costs. He's not paying any mind to it. He's like, oh, this is nice. How about this? And I don't know what store that is, but they seriously need to check their prices. There's like $40 for this basic t-shirt. Like,
yeah,
I couldn't believe that.
Like, I was like, man, we can print you one for $15 with the exact same wording and it'll be fine. Right. So my question here, my biggest question here was, so obviously the whole storyline for them for this episode specifically is they're going to go visit his family, like his mom and sister in Washington. That's where they're going. And in the last episode, his mom said, hey, we would like, you're bringing the $1,000, right? You're giving us $1,000. And they were hesitant on the call. And then he kind of blamed it on Kalani that's not going to happen.
Well, here's the thing. You guys said on the recap that, you know, he makes her the bad guy. I don't think that's true. I think he is totally willing to give them whatever they want. Like, he's like, yeah, sure. But then Kalani puts her foot down. Like, it's not like he puts it on her. He's right. Willing to give them whatever.
Like, well, for sure. But here's the thing, Jason. It's like, I would love to give you $5,000 because you seem like a nice guy and we get along, but I don't have $5,000. So if Liana's like, we can't do that, I'm like, I'm sorry. Liana saying no, but even though I know, like, we don't have the means, that's the thing for me, is that he's working part-time as a sampler. There's no, and they have two babies. There's no way they can just part ways with $1,000, even though I know he wants to do it.
Right. And I wonder, like, if it's something as if, like, he's so, like, immature, he may see, like, they have money in the bank, but he doesn't think about what bills need to pay or, like, what future expenses they may have. And he's just like, oh, well, we have it. Why don't we just give it to them?
Right. Like, it's like,
you know,
when kids don't really have the concept of tax, like, oh, it says $1, I have $1. It's like, well, it's going to be more than $1. It's the same concept of, like, oh, they have $1,000 in the bank. That he's like, well, we have $1,000, but he's not taking into account all the chunks of money that are going to be parted for utilities, groceries, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So my question to you, Mina, is, so I was born and raised in Dubai. And then when I went to visit family in Iran or my other extended family in Sweden, we would bring them gifts, but they would be like gifts, like souvenirs from Dubai. They'll be like Dubai centric things. Or, and then when I was leaving Iran, like, my cousins would give us like Iranian based gifts. So for me, it's weird that they're all from Samoa and they're bringing gifts that are Samoa centric. Is that strange or does that seem normal? I can't tell.
Oh, it's very strange. And it threw me off this entire scene because my question was just like, why? There's so many other things. Like, they have kids. Like, I mean, I have a 5-year-old. I have a 5-year-old, and my preference when I'm giving gifts to people is to just like put her face on like a shirt or like put her face on a calendar. So, like, they have kids. Like, it's their grandkids. Like, why wouldn't they do something like that? Like, or like even get something like, I mean, they live in Washington. So like, the stuff that he was buying them were like, it seemed like he got like Hawaiian or Samoan type shirts and like the like traditional outfits. And it's like, I don't, they're in Washington, isn't it? Like, like, why would they do that? And don't they already have that? And then he gets them like all this corned beef and it's like, okay, like it's probably some kind of like special thing, but like you don't need to like buy the store out. Like, it's a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
Especially when they have made it clear that they want cash from them.
Like, if someone's listening who can give me insight to this, please tweet me at Puyaism, because I'm very curious, because I did find it odd that these were the choices. Because then we saw that the total ran up to like, what, $191. And here I am. They've just agreed to, we can't do 1,000. Kalani said 50. He got offended. She said 100. He said fine. Well, from where I'm standing, you use that 200 that you just spent at the store, put it with the 100, give them 300. That's at least a third of the money. That's better, right? Wouldn't that be the choice?
We need gifts and cash. Like, it's crazy to me. And I think the quote of the episode is
yes.
Kehlani, if you think 50 is a smack in the face, maybe you deserve a smack in the face. Oh, well, my God. That was priceless.
If that's the saying of the episode, the runner up has to be don't scroll your eyes.
Scroll your eyes.
Yeah. I love that.
And like, you can tell that he had said that to her before, because she just had no reaction. She was just like, okay, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, and this whole like money thing, it's just like in the preview for the next episode where we see like his mom and stuff, it seems like she just wants money. It doesn't really seem like she cares very much about like gifts and that kind of thing, especially when the gifts might not really be all that great. So yeah, if they're going to agree on $100, like, if I'm Asuelu or even Kalani, I probably would have been like, hey, why don't we just like put these gifts back and just give them $300 cash? Because that sounds like a better solution.
It kind of feels a little shakedowny. Like, I come from a world where definitely in the culture, it is like, when you move abroad and if you have you're very well off, send money back home to family, you know, send money back. Like, I knew people who, I think I said this in the previous podcast, where like their dad was in Dubai and they were staying with their dad, but then their mom was in Pakistan and the dad would send money every month because like he's getting the money there, like that kind of thing. In this situation, it just feels like there's no sympathy. I think it's just the assumption of, hey, look how well off they are living. Look how what a nice house Asuelu's family's given them. They have money. We need money. Or sorry, Kalani's family. That's what's the situation.
I think maybe as well, it's, you know, maybe it's the way that I kind of think about it too. Like, sometimes I think, well, you're on TV, you must be getting paid. But like you said earlier, they're not getting paid that much. Like, and the way that they're asking for it, like, is insanely like rude and disrespectful. Like, you had the sister on the on the Skype call, like last episode, like hitting her hands, like, give me that money, like, what in the world? And then the preview is like even worse for next episode. It's like, you know, give me my money, like, it's none of your business, give me my money. Like, my gosh, what?
Yeah, I'm ready to say that I think that's going to be my uncomfortable minutes next week, next episode. I feel like every episode of 90 Day, there's like one scene that's must see, and then there's one scene that's really cringe and hard to watch. And I think that's going to be the hard to watch. I'm going to feel very uncomfortable watching that.
Agreed.
Yeah. And then, so ultimately they get to Washington, and immediately Asuelu wants to just rush to the mom's house, just rush to his mother's house. And the kids are distraught. I mean, like, traveling with kids is one thing. And then when the kids are just like, they've got a day of travel on them, just go to the Airbnb, Asuelu. And I think this, to me, is further proof again of the whole 4 to 15 year old mentality, where Asuelu just doesn't know better and doesn't understand that, oh, if I want this right now, there's logical reason why I shouldn't have this right now. He doesn't have that in his arsenal. And it kind of sucks, because the last time we saw Asuelu in his original 90 Day season, I loved him. I related to his sensitivity. I appreciated his naivete. But now, for some reason, I think now that there's another kid on the table and it's been a minute since they've been together, I'm just disappointed every time I see him react to something.
Totally agree. I feel like on this show, with a lot of these couples, especially the ones that like have kids now, it's like, at first, yeah, it's kind of funny. Look at them. Like, they're silly. His boohole hurt, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But now it's like, oh, you should probably like become an adult at some point. Like, maybe take responsibility for your family and your kids and like try to establish something. Because Kalani and Asuelu, they're living in her parents' house. Like, I have to think that like her parents helped them a significant amount. And like Asuelu, he doesn't really seem to have a problem with that. He's kind of like, oh, cool. Like, I'm the man. I go and work at my little part-time job and go play volleyball. It's like, okay, Oswaldo, like, this is not like a teenager hanging out with like his family now. It's okay, you have to be in charge of this house. You have to be in charge of your family. Like, let's do this. If you're, if that's the way that you view how families work, then you need to actually do it and not just be like, oh, can we give my parents money? Okay, well, it's coming out of my pocket, so we have it. It's cool. Like, I don't know. He doesn't seem to grasp everything that's going on around him and in his own home, I guess. But I mean, maybe he just needs more time. I don't know. It's hard to say with him.
I think from this, I don't know about what you guys' family situation is, but I have an 11-year-old daughter, and this show scares the crap out of me because, like, I think in like 10 years, like, am I going to be like, let's say a Lo or a Janice, like, you know, Lo being Kalani's father, like, like, is this going to be me soon? Like, it scares the crap out of me. It's like, I don't want, you know, my daughter making these crazy decisions and ending up with this guy that acts like a 5-year-old with, you know, and he's the father of my 2 grandkids. Like, I feel like I would want to be like a Lo, you know, like a quiet intimidation, like type of thing. But I feel like I would be like a Janice, Ari's mom, like trying to persuade them to, you know, do something else. God forbid I end up like a Debbie. I would never want that ever. I would. I don't think I'll ever be in that situation, but let's pray not. So yeah, I come at it from that perspective, and it scares like the Jesus out of me that's going to end up being me someday.
I just, one other thought about like this, like going to the Airbnb and like him being upset. Why was it not an option for like Kalani and the kids to go to the Airbnb and Oswaldo to go, like, go see his family by himself?
It's definitely an option, but then it's like, are they going to think that's rude? Or if you're Kalani, are you going to be like, hey, you know what? I don't want him there alone because he's going to throw me under the bus, and then I'm going to
shake him down.
Yeah,
shake him down. He's not going to come back with any possessions. His clothes are gone.
Yeah.
They're going to strip him dry and sell his clothes.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Yeah, and like earlier in the episode, Kalani says that her sister is flying out to help with the kids. So I find it, because she acknowledges that Oswaldo is just kind of going to be with his family. So I think it's kind of great / not so great that she thinks that she has to bring in like backup to help with with her own kids, even though her husband's there, because she knows how the situation is going to be with Oswaldo. And but I am excited to see Kalani because I do like Kalani.
Yeah, I remember not liking Kalani and Kalani in the first season because I thought they were trying to be like the low rent Kardashians. But I'm definitely finding a newfound respect for Kalani and having to deal with all this stuff that's going down. It's a lot to deal with, especially because like there's the one element of the language barrier, but then there's the maturity levels, then there's the monetary issues, like, and then there's the family, and like if they're disappointed, it's like, oh well, I love who I love, and that's fine. But then if I have to see them on such a regular basis and they don't approve of him. Like, it's just so much on the mind for Kalani. And I'm like, I definitely respect her far more than I ever did before.
But do you guys, like, see this Kalani and Swither situation and see love? Or do you see, like, I'm stuck in the situation? Like, there's no chemistry between them at all. Like, it just seems like they're both stuck.
Yeah, I feel like with Kalani, like, she has said that Oswaldo was, like, the guy that she lost her virginity to. And, like, they have that connection because of that, and then she got pregnant right away. So I just feel like she's just become more and more stuck over time, and at this point it's like, well, like, I'm if I divorce him, I probably am going to have to take care of these 2 kids by myself. And
she does already anyway, though.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like maybe she doesn't want to deal with all that, with everything else that's already going on with them. I can definitely see them like not being together for the long term. But and also she doesn't talk about it much anymore, but she has said that she was like raised Mormon, and maybe that has something to do with it. But
I think so.
Yeah, if I were her, I would have probably been done with him a while ago.
Yeah, for sure.
All eyes on the reunion. We'll see what happens there and what the fallout is moving forward. I can go one of 2 directions here. I'm probably going to pick one of the shorter, like the couples we saw like 1 scene of and wasn't really all that much to talk about. I just can't decide which one I want to complain about more first. You know what? Let's go with this one. Let's go with Angela and Michael. Let's go to Nigeria. And this insanity. Okay, so We get there. Angela and Michael are there. They're walking through this like zoo area. She sees this monkey. She's terrified of the monkey. They walk away. They sit down. And this is where Angela decides, I'm going to tell Michael about like the potential, like the test results coming back and how it could be cancerous. And that's why I was bleeding and figuring that stuff out. So she tells him this stuff. And then pretty much he's trying to map it. He's like, so what happens if you have cancer? She's like, then no baby. Then my uterus is gone and I can't tote a baby. Again, I've never heard anyone say toting a baby until Angela, and now I can't unhear it.
I want to tote this baby for you, Michael.
Michael? I can tote it. I just need your eggs. So speaking of toting, so then she's like, okay, so like we might not be able to have a baby at that point. And how would you feel about that? And he's like, well, I'll get back to you on that. I have to process this thought. Ooh, and she loses her mind. She's like, well, I guess you kind of gave me your answer then. So you don't care about me that much. You don't love me enough if we can't have a baby together and you don't want to be with me. And I'm like, really, Angela? Like the guy's been with you through thick and thin. You get mad at him when he so much sits in a room with other women. You get angry at him if his phone rings and you think the voice, like the ringtone is different. You have also like taken him away from his friends. He does everything. How are you still going to think he doesn't love you, first of all? And then second of all, while they're talking to the doctor and she's about to give the results for cancer, right? As a former smoker, when you hear this, put the cigarette down, ma'am.
Like, well, she's the chain smoking meemaw.
She is, but damn. And like, I don't, Mina, I don't understand her banter with the doctor. I feel like the doctor feels so uncomfortable when she hits the doctor with this uterus is like indestructible. This is amazing. And she just laughs at her own jokes. It's too much. What are your thoughts about this whole Angela Michael situation, Mina?
Yeah, and she also told the doctor that the doctor's the most beautifulest doctor that she's ever had in her womb. So there's that. But it's just like, okay, so first of all, why is anybody pretending like Angela's probably going to have a baby? It just doesn't, from the beginning, I've never thought that this was a possibility. Like, she's 54, like she's a chain smoker. It probably has been for most of her life. Like, she just does not scream out like fertile to me. So I don't know. It's just in this whole scene where like she gets mad at Michael for like being like, oh, well, like if you can't have a baby, I'm going to have to rethink things. It's like, yeah, he's been saying from day one that having a baby is important for him. Like other people around him in Africa have said having a baby is important. So like, why is she shocked when he says that having a baby is important? Like, it just seems very, I don't know. Like, she's clearly just like all about her idea and she just wants to be with Michael no matter what. So the fact that he would reject her for any reason at all is just like very alarming to her and she can't get over it.
Well, she's put him in a tough spot because, you know, if she can't have a baby, she's not going to let him get another wife to have a baby. She's not even going to let him look at any other female in it anyway to get anything, no less a baby. So she's kind of put him in a tough spot. It's either me or you have no children. Like,
yeah, because can someone remind me, have they discussed adoption at any point?
No, they haven't, as far as I remember. And that's what I was thinking too. Like, there are many other ways to have children, but they don't even want to talk about that or even think about that. They want to unrealistically think of a 54-year-old carrying a baby full term.
I think they've like passively addressed it. Like they've been like, oh, well, Michael needs to have like his blood and his genes passed on. That's important to him. Like they've said that several times. So I think maybe like behind the scenes, they've talked about it and Michael's probably rejected the idea. But like maybe now seeing like the reality is either like you give up having kids altogether or like if you want to be with Angela, you have to maybe seek out like adoption or a different kind of option for you. Maybe he'd be more open to it. But I don't know. Just the fact that like he gets this news right away. And like, so first of all, the way the scene is like she tells him like, hey, just so you know, like I could have cancer. And then like immediately they go talk to the doctor and it's like, okay, well, like way to just throw all this at him at once. And then like expect him to come out with like a clear decision at the end. Like, it's just, Angela is just, she's bad news.
Yeah. No, big, big time bad news. And I think Angela is trying so hard to get what Darcy has now gotten, which is her own spinoff show. The whole, every antic Angela throws at every reunion screams, I want my own show. Even the berating here, the yelling, the jokes, it's all like, I'm a star, look at me. And it's like, come on, Mima, you're not a star. Stop it. Stop it. Put the smokes down. Oh my God. Yeah.
It was so crazy. She's like, I'm glad I don't have cancer while, you know, smoking on this cancer stick.
Yeah.
it's crazy to me.
Come on, Angela. Like, at least. Yeah. So I, and like, cause the other thing is like, Michael's wants to pass his genes down. That's the thing. But she's also very adamant that she does not want a donor that is not in the family. So it's either her daughter or it's nobody else. So that's never going to happen.
And Skyla ain't playing that.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that I feel like she's known for the longest time this isn't happening. He's kind of known it's never happening. So I feel like you either decide whether this is going to be a thing that happens or not, or you have to move on because there doesn't seem to be any other resolve.
I don't know if she wants move on because that means she would lose the show unless she finds someone else. But I think she's going to string this out as long as she can.
Yeah, she could become a Darcy and find a different partner to be with on before the 90 days next season. So I don't know. I just am ready for them to move on from this conversation because I feel like they've been talking about having a baby for a very long time and all the viewers kind of have known that it's probably not going to happen. So let's talk about something more interesting on their segments.
Yeah. Well, what else is there that we haven't seen anything else. I'm ready to get more stuff moving forward from them that isn't this. And I don't know. I'm starting to feel like we're starting to see the end of their storyline. I don't think there's much else they can give us.
I want to see Michael no suit stuff.
I'm ready for that. I want to see Michael in the purple suit more than anything, really.
Honestly. Oh, Michael's face when the monkey jumped on him was very priceless, by the way. Mm-hmm. His little giggle was just beautiful.
I want a show, a spinoff show, where that just 90 Day Fiancé cast members reacting to like different videos from around the internet. So I want the cast to be Asuelu and Michael and Jihoon. And basically it's like everyone who's a child and has that childlike wonder in their eyes when they see something. I need this in my life. I'd be very okay with this.
Hey, Michael, what do you think of this cat video?
Exactly. Or like show like Jihoon the latest TikTok trends. See how Jihoon likes them. Like I'm here for that kind of nonsense. Let's see. So Mina, what other nonsense are you here for? Who do you want to talk about next?
Let's see. So who do we have? We have Libby and Andre. Maybe should we go to one that was really short this week was Paul and Karini. Do we go to them?
Let's go to them. That's the one I was picking between this and Angela and Michael. So take it away. Well, what do we see from them this week?
Yeah. So it seems like it's a couple weeks after they moved into that like studio house thing. And Paul meets his mom at the pet store. And first of all, we find out like right away that Paul used to own ferrets, which is not surprising to me in the slightest. I think it's like the most predictable thing. It's like, oh yeah, I'm kind of mad at myself that I didn't really connect the dots earlier. But and then also instantly when he sees his mom is like, you asked me to come here so that I would buy you dog food, right? And he's like, well, yeah, I mean, me and Karini, we've had a really tough time, blah, blah, blah. And nobody wants to hear it anymore, Paul. Like, come on. And then he talks to her to his mom about how he was surprised that because he's a felon, he's having a tough time finding a job. And it's like, also, Paul, come on, you should know these things. like, what did you think was going to happen? So yeah, they're just in this pet store. The mom buys the dog food and then, he asks if he's fat. And that's really all that happens because their segment was pretty this week.
He sure can spot a sale, though. That's for sure. He once again talks about this sale of like, oh, my God, this is this many for this many. And like, and I really love Paul's mom. Like,
oh, my God.
She is giving it to him like real. Like, she literally called the man a deadbeat.
Oh, yeah, that too.
To his face.
She's like, oh, why are you here? Because you want me to buy your stuff? Like, oh, yeah. And then, like, you know, they leave the pet store, and she says, I forgot what she said to him exactly. He's like, you know me. And like, I was thinking to myself, like, yeah, unfortunately she does. She knows you're going to mess it up.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. So last week we got the big trailer park suite reveal. She seemed okay with it. Now it's starting to sound like she's not really okay with it. We didn't even see Karini this episode.
Hey, can I ask you guys something real quick?
Yeah, yeah, go for it.
Do you think her name is actually Karini, or is it like Kareem, and they're just putting like extra E on it?
I don't know. It's possible. I mean, Eric-y is Eric, but we're
I mean, and they call Pierre Pierre-y. I'm like, I think it's Pierre, usually. Yeah. Maybe they're just deciding to put the extra accent on it. I don't know.
He's like, I think it's a Brazilian thing.
It's a Brazilian thing?
It's a Brazilian thing. Yeah, just because like Larissa does it too, and I think she's from Brazil too, right? So, yeah, I think it's just like Karini, Pierre-y. Every time that Paul says Pierre-y, though, it kind of doesn't sound right to me. But yeah, so I definitely get what you're saying. But I think
maybe it's his accent that's throwing me off. I mean, I guess if it's a Brazilian thing, if she's telling him her name, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, so I on howtopronounce.com/Karini, it's Kareen. It's Kareen when it's pronounced in English, according to the audio pronunciations that have 81 ratings. But I'm still going to say Karini because I've just been used to it.
Well, that's the better way to say it. That's
yeah. Like, yeah. It has that extra E, Karini.
It's like, yeah, I was just good. You know, curious if she told him that or if he's adding that, like same right. thing with Pierre, like Pierre. Like it just always strikes me whenever they say their names. I'm like, is that real? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past Paul, like mispronouncing it for this long though. So it could
yeah.
be that.
Yeah, for sure.
So, for me, the one big big ticket item with them is something that came to light this week where they're definitely in a position, Paul and Karini, in real time, where they have some problems. There's been police called.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I haven't decided yet how deeply we want to dive into non-show stuff on the pod. So I want to put that out there. If anyone wants to check this out, just, you know, search up 90 Day Fiancé Karini, you'll see it. And then tweet at us, let us know, do you want Reddit stuff / like real-time stuff involved here? Or do you want it to be like a segment at the end of the podcast? Like, or do you want it just not involved at all? Because I'm open to all of them. I get that information anyway. So it's just a matter of whether we talk about it or not. But I did see that stuff come in this week, and that kind of made me happy that we didn't see Karini in this episode, given all the messiness and the upset stuff that's going on.
Yeah, it does. Paul did talk in this episode about Karini, like, not really doing the best, like, mentally, I think.
Yeah.
And that is after, and I think this episode aired, like, after all of the drama was happening with them. So mm-hmm. that was definitely more alarming, knowing what we know now about what's going on with them. So yeah, I just hope Karini's doing okay.
Same. And Karini and the baby, as long as they're doing fine.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. But then we didn't get much else. I was watching this with Liana. I was like, wait, Paul has dogs? Like, I did not even clock that he has dogs. I forgot he had dogs.
They were on the last episode. They look like demon dogs. Like, I was like, oh my God. Like,
yeah. I don't know how in the midst of the glorious house tour, I just did not commit that to memory at all. Because, like, when we first started in the pets, I'm like, why are they here? Like, what? These locations are getting stranger and stranger. Why are they here? Makes no sense to me.
I do find it funny that she has to meet him out other places. Like, she does not trust him in her home. Like,
yeah,
she knows who she's dealing with. Like, they took their keys off his keychain. Like, they know who they're dealing with. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for a second when they were having this conversation in the pet store, I was like, this is an odd place to have this conversation, but then I realized, oh, it's because they don't really have a normal place to have any conversations anymore. It has to be like restaurants or public businesses. So
yeah,
I guess we'll just continue to see this every single time Paul talks to his mom.
Yeah, we'll keep seeing this. I think to just talk about his mom real quick, I remember the first time we met her and she was giving him some of her hair before he traveled to Brazil, and I thought, this woman is crazy. She's on another level of, like, she loves her. I thought she was Debbie before Debbie. You know, I was like, she's just insanely into her son and wants to protect him and doesn't want to lose him. But then now I love everything we're getting from her. I loved when they walked out of the store and he's like, do you think I'm getting fat? Karini wants me to join the gym. And she's like, boy, get your house in order. Like, don't worry about this right now. You have other stuff to deal with. I love her. I love her so much.
She is done with the nonsense for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at some point if they do a roundtable of the 90 day parents, that would also be fun too. Just
fantastic.
Say.
Love that.
Yeah.
This whole episode was like a big family you know, centric episode. Almost every segment was dealing with, you know, their extended family.
The parents, it was big. It was big on the storyline here. Jason, that takes us to the final two. Who do you want to talk about next?
I would love Andre and Libby.
It's only fitting that we go there next. Yes. So take it away.
My gosh. So first of all, I think Libby constantly calls Andre Andre because she wants to imagine that he's like some prince. Because it sounds like Moldova sounds like some like fancy place. Like she wants to introduce him to her friends. Like, this is Prince Andre of Moldova. I think that's why she constantly puts the accent on the R. That's number one. But, you know, they start off the episode, you know, again, arguing about, you know, their issues with her family. And, you know, their first scene's pretty, you know, innocuous. They just are going back and forth about it. You know, it's not until we get to the restaurant that things really start getting good. You know, and this is what happens when you send a bunch of Kens to another country without their Karens to calm them down. Like, like you get into a fight. Like, that's what happens. And you know, with these, you know, what was her brother's name? Chuck or which one is
it? Charlie and Chuck is the dad.
Chuck is the dad. Like, and they've been pushing Andre's buttons like the whole time. And so it's just like, you know, it's insane. Like, interrogating his friends about his life. You know, this is not the time or place for that. Like, you should have done this, you know, ages ago, like asking him about his past. And to Andre's friend's credit, they really stick up for him and like, yeah, he loves your daughter. Like, he's a real stand-up guy. You know, they won't divulge what happened in Ireland, or what caused him to go to Ireland, which is like, you know, that's a whole other mystery and enigma. There must be something going on there because, you know, it's a whole secret.
Yeah.
And then Libby, like, you know, kind of like Colt, whoever talks to her last, like, she's on their side. She goes back and forth the whole dinner, like, well, you know, I would like you to get a job, or, you know, I would like you to do this, after she gets spoken to by whoever. Like, she just goes back and forth, and she actually doesn't want any part of it. She's like, well, do you want to sit over here and talk to him? Because I don't want to be the go-between, which I kind of get, and I kind of, you know, put some responsibility on her too, because she's really kind of encouraging this and not putting her foot down about things with her family or with Andre.
Yeah, it seems to me. So actually, I want to give the floor to you, Mina. What is your thought about this family, this wedding, Moldova? I want to get your takes on where we're at with Andre and Libby.
Yeah. So their whole entire storyline for the season of like, are they going to go through with their second wedding? Like, it's just very unrelatable to me. Like, oh, they're already married. Like, why does any of this truly matter? Like, why are they so like gung-ho and finding out like the mysterious like Ireland thing? It's like he was able to get a K-1 visa to come to the US. So like, no matter what he did, it probably wasn't that bad that like he probably didn't kill somebody. Okay. So I don't know. Just this whole thing there, I feel like they're making it a way bigger deal than it needs to be. And then we have Libby, who has been playing both sides like pretty much this entire relationship, where they've been like a family unit. And like, it's kind of funny now that she's like, oh, I don't want to be in the middle. I don't want to be in the middle. It's like, girl, you've been in the middle like this whole time, and you've been kind of stirring the pot this whole time by telling your family like negative things about Andre and vice versa. I don't know. It's just like, they're already married. So why are we getting into this? And why does it need to happen in front of all of Andre's friends in this restaurant, which Andre says that this restaurant is his favorite restaurant, and there are like dead animal carcasses everywhere. And I am the least bit surprised. Just like pull with the ferrets. Andre makes sense having this favorite restaurant. But yeah, this thing is just so unrelatable to me.
Just like Larissa, I hate feeling for Andre, but I kind of fell for him in this instance. And like, for the past couple episodes, when, you know, Chuck and Charlie are just like badgering him nonstop, like, dude, this is like you said, Mina, like, the time for this is past. We're married already. Like, this is done.
This is for me, but I this is the couple I probably dislike the most amongst the bunch here, which is just astounding for me to say, given that we've talked about a bunch of couples here. I think both sides are just definitely messing with each other for the sake of getting a rise out of each other. I think it was very obvious when Chuck came through the airport last time and was like belittling the size of the airport and stuff to Andre's face. That was already gaslighting. And I think that Andre is gaslighting the Chuck and Charlie right back. The thing I don't like is in the middle of all this, he keeps gaslighting Libby. And I do believe that Libby doesn't want any part of this argument here, but she keeps ending up in it. The way he phrases the things he's saying to her are really bad. Like the first scene we saw was him saying, "What's up? Did you get sober today?" She's like, "I had a glass of wine." And he's like, "Yeah, it was enough for you to say some stupid stuff." Like, I would leave the table. I'll be like, I'm not messing with you today. Like, this is not happening. But then the whole thing of like, he wants to be like the macho man, like, "Oh, I'm the man of the house." And now he's in Moldova and he's like strutting his stuff. But then he's getting mad at her for not defending that he's at home. And I'm like, yeah, because you keep saying that you don't want to be at home to your family. And then you're saying, no, but I have to be at home because I'm the dad and you're making the money. So I'm okay with it. And we find out through this interaction that the thing is, he doesn't do much at home, according to Libby. He's kind of playing games and has become a homebody and is getting comfortable with it. But then he doesn't want the public to know, which is her thing of like, well, I'm not going to skew the truth and tell my dad that you're not playing video games because you are. So it's a complicated relationship that they're having there for sure. I do think the most ironic thing to come out of this entire episode and show and the last episode is Charlie being like trying to figure out what Andre's past is as a former he has a criminal record. And it's like, Charlie, like, way to be. You are not a patron saint. Like, stop this.
Don't throw stones at a glass house, bro.
Yeah, it's like, you want your stuff out there? I do find some validity in them trying to learn more about Andre, but it's very clear that they have malicious intent by the way they're doing it. And if that fight, if that like confrontation wasn't the fakest thing I've ever seen, it gave me nothing. They were practically like cuddling and it was just a warm embrace. It didn't look like they were about to throw hands, which is, I'm never one to advocate for fight, but if you're doing this, at least sell it to me like I think you were going to do it. Because now I do not believe for a second that you were going to do anything.
So, it was a middle school fight waiting for teachers to come break it up.
Yeah. It's like, wait, why isn't anyone yelling fight? Why are we not being separated? Oh no, now we're here. Okay, well, I'm not going to punch
him. Hold me back.
Please. Oh, no one's holding me back. Oh, this looks awkward as hell. Okay.
Like a fight on like the challenge waiting for security to come break you up.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah,
go for it, Mina.
Yeah. Just this fight, it just very much reminded me of the fight that we saw with Pedro and Chantel. And that fight happened like right before Pedro and Chantel like got their own show. I know you mentioned earlier like some couple that you thought might be trying to vie for their own show, but I feel like Libby and Andre are definitely trying to go for that spot as well. Just their whole storyline this season just seems a little just too much and a little fabricated. It's repetitive
and boring.
Exactly. They're going through this, even though they're in Moldova, which is nice to see a change of scenery, like they're still having similar fights that they had like last season in America about Andre, should you get a job? Should you not get a job? It's like, okay, like, I don't really care if your husband gets a job at this point. Like, if he wants to, whatever, but that's your own personal situation. And like, just this whole thing with like Chuck and Charlie, it's like they both have criminal records. And like, I've heard that Chuck is still up to some shady business with his current, because he is in charge of like rental properties. And I've heard that he's like not really paying his mortgages and doing stuff that he should be doing right now. So they're not great people, yet they continue to dig into Andre's past. And it's like, okay, like whatever happened, like it's probably, honestly, my guess is that like he followed some girl there or something. Like it's probably something so minor, but like he just doesn't want to talk about it. So I don't know. I'm curious to see if there is some kind of dirt that they're going to dig up, but I at the same time don't really care all that much.
No, same. And I feel like, you know, we're not even talking about Libby's sisters because they're not in Moldova, but even their whole drama of like, oh, but now I can't come see you. And like, he's ruined everything. He's the worst. I I definitely want to remove the Kardashian wannabe crown from the Kalani Kalini family and put it directly on this family. And I 100% agree with you. I think they're vying for a spinoff show. The entire family's getting involved in like the dramatics now. And it's just not a good look, especially because they're both so unrootable that I don't even know which side of the family I'm like with. I don't think I'm with either of them. I feel bad for Libby in the middle a little bit, but even then I'm like, well, you signed up for this and you asked your dad to finance this wedding and you said, yeah, we'll do Moldova. That's cool. Like you agreed to get here and you should have seen through some of this man's nonsense, but you haven't. So it is what it is. They infuriate me greatly and I'm happy for this season to end and we don't see them again, but they've been on every single Happily Ever After. Like it feels like, so why are they still here?
Yeah, I call Libby's side of the family the Karen convoy. That's just like basically just what it is. Like their behavior and like that, I think it was like either the first or second episode of the season was just so obnoxious. And they're all and that scene where they were all sitting by the pool breastfeeding and just talking crap about Andre and anything like that was just too much.
Yeah, seems like they're always looking for attention in one way or another. And I mean, obviously they're on a show, so they've gotten it thus far, but I hope it ends eventually.
Yeah. And then we can get to the last couple from the Happily Ever After franchise, and that is Sinjin and Tanya. This was also one of the shorter segments we got, but basically in the last episode we had seen that Sinjin was talking to his brother and we find out that his brother has a blood clot in his lung. They found a blood clot in his lung, so he is trying to get Tanya to go to South Africa with him to see his brother, to see his family, and she agrees. So now they're on their way to the airport, and she makes a couple offhand comments about him drinking too much, and he gets super defensive, and now they're having a back and forth, and she's like, well, you can't handle your alcohol, you drink too much, and then she talks about how she's worried because when he drinks with his friends, they get rowdy, they act like they're the only people in the bar, and she doesn't want that side of Sinjin to happen. And so this is their whole relationship story to me, gang, is very much classic. One of them wants them to be a we, and the other one is not ready to commit to not being a free spirit. And that's all it is. And we're just seeing different versions of it, of like, oh, well, what if I want to travel? Oh, what if I want to like get a backpack and leave? And I was like, oh, well, what if I do want to have three drinks with my friends? What about that? Is that going to be a problem? Like, it's so contentious over something that is so obviously visible to see. And he doesn't like this. He doesn't like being controlled at all. So what do we want to talk about here, Jason? What is your thoughts on the Sinjin and Tanya relationship?
Well, this is the most boring segment from the most boring couple, I think, of this show. Because it's just, I think they're both kind of want to be their own people, but they're with the wrong person for that. Like, mm-hmm. He even says to his family, like, I don't think I'm the person, I can be the person she wants me to be right now. I think Tanya kind of knows that. I think just kind of going through the motions right now. They got married super quick. And, you know, it's just, they're not the right people for each other. They just need to realize that. Because he still wants to be, you know, like he said, I want to pick up a backpack and go. And she doesn't want that. She wants to settle in America, you know, have their kids, and just be that. But yeah. He's not having it.
No.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like Sinjin is still in this like party way of life. He just wants to like get up, drink, party, hang out with his bros, and travel, and that's it. And there's like, you could say maybe there's something wrong with that, but there's nothing really wrong with that if that's what he wants to do with his life. But like, Tanya clearly wants something else. She wants like to have kids like yesterday, and he still has not expressed any interest in that at all. So it's just like, I don't know what these people are doing. Like, why are you guys, and they knew about these issues before they got married. So
right. It's
kind of like, I don't feel bad for either of them because they chose to put themselves in this situation. But like, how long are they just going to continue to live like this?
Yeah, I was living that life though when Tanya was slurping that tea super slow.
Oh my God.
I've been in situations where I'm sitting there waiting like, really? Is this have to be happening right now?
Yeah, like I'm happy we didn't get much from them this episode, especially considering some of the other ones were worth talking about more. I forgot completely that we didn't see one couple in this episode, which was a bit of a bummer because I was keen to see them. But I guess we will. Was that? No, I'm thinking of the other way. That's my bad.
I was like, what?
Yeah, we saw everyone here. Yeah, we barely saw.
Do you think the producers were upset that that Sinjin's mom and sister weren't more drama?
Well, it seems like there might be some stuff coming in next time, but I don't know if that's an editing trick of basically she's going to ask Tanya if she's like been pressuring Sinjin because or like he's trying to change Sinjin because that is what she said in a confessional, which was like Tanya pressured my son to get married and move to the States. So I think there's some harboring of emotions there, and that'll come to a head this next episode. But ultimately, this was a fine episode of Happily Ever After. It left me being happy that we have the other way to talk about, because I do think that when the first episode of this Happily Ever After came out, I thought this is like an all-star cast for sure. These are some big names. I'm excited to see them. And then the more and more we've gotten into it, the less and less I am intrigued slash care about some of these couples. So, but meanwhile, the other way is just hit after hit for me.
Yeah, the other way definitely won the week for sure. Yeah. For this week.
Yeah, so are you guys ready to talk about that? Because I certainly am.
Let's roll.
All right, perfect. All right, Mina, let's do the same thing we've been doing. You pick the first couple from the bunch and we'll talk about them.
Okay. Yeah. Let's see. So do we start off with, I think there were only four couples on this one. So yeah.
It's the one that we're missing.
Yeah. I think we're missing Kenny and Armando and Brittany and Yasmin. Yep. Do we start with Devin and Jihoon?
Let's go with Devin and Jihoon, arguably the stars of this episode, but take it away.
Yeah. So they start where they left off last episode, where the translator was kind of going awry, and which was probably one of my favorite segments thus far. And Devin is just clearly unhappy with Jihoon still. I don't know if she's ever really been happy with him. They both go outside, and Devin just like makes this demand. First of all, Jihoon's like apologizing. I made a mistake. Sorry. And then Devin's like, if you're really sorry, transfer $300. Or $3,000 to my bank account so you can prove that you're not lying and that you have money. So Jihoon, like the man child that he is, goes back inside the restaurant, gets his mom, goes to get the money. And then later on, obviously they give the money to Devin. And Devin is still like, oh, Jihoon ruined my life and ruined my kid's life. I don't know what I should do. And my thing is like, okay, Devin, you've been literally going back and forth between Korea and the United States for months at this point. Like you need to kind of like make up your mind, or at least like give enough time for something to change. So like you make up your mind, because she gives him like this ultimatum. That's like, if you don't change within a month, then I'm going back to the US. And it's like a month. Okay. Yeah. But like you gave him a month last time and that didn't really do much. So like, I don't know. She needs to decide either like stay in the United States for like maybe like 6 months and like let him try to do something in Korea, and like once he's proven himself, then go back, or like stay in Korea with him, like help and see what can be done, because Devin has some income coming in, like she's not completely broke. So I don't know, it just seems like Devin just needs to kind of make a decision, and Jihoon needs to stop being so much of a man child.
I think that Jihoon's mom really shone this episode as rivaling for the villain of the show. Well, the villain of the series if we're talking about the other show with Debbie, she really came out as the villain this episode. And she's definitely hardcore enabling Jihoon, like to the level where she's like, you know, well, she's acting like he hasn't done anything to Devin, where, you know, he's lied to her constantly. And she knows he's lied to her constantly. And as far as Devin goes, I think, you know, she should have known who she was dealing with. She should have had tangible proof of income or a job or something before she came all the way over to Korea.
Yeah. Yep. No, I just find this. So my favorite thing was finding out that each parent is aligned with one of them. And the fact that Ji-hoon's dad is so adamant that Devin is in the right, that it's bothering Ji-hoon's mom, is incredible, because I 100% agree with you. Ji-hoon's mom is big time enabling him to the point where clearly he doesn't have his act together. But I also want to talk about what Mina pointed out, the whole, like, you have a month. A month is not enough for anything. Like, you know, research has shown it usually takes what, about like 2 to 4 weeks to create a habit, a healthy habit. If he's supposed to be learning how to undo the years of immaturity and irresponsibility with money, that's not going to happen in a month, especially if he also does not have that steady job that's going to give him a good income, a month's worth of good income for them to use to move into a new place. It's doomed to fail with a month. She has to commit to longer at this point. Sadly, I know it sucks for her because she didn't sign up to deal with this nonsense. She kind of did, but she got blindsided, right? But it should be like a 4-month thing, and she should monitor him closely. And I'm sure if he's got the chops or if he cares enough, he'll get there. If he doesn't, he doesn't. And then you can move on. A month is not going to do anything but just cause more strain and stress on the relationship than already exists.
Well, he was like, I'm changing. And like, I'm thinking to myself, like, how exactly are you changing? We haven't seen you do any changing. What are you talking about?
Right. And his mom says that he's like, he's trying. So like, what can you say? It's like, is he really truly trying? Like, he has some job that is part-time delivery something. Doesn't really seem like he's working all that much. Like, he could be doing a whole lot more. Like, and Ji-hoon's openly admitting that, like, he has not been the best with his money, and like, he spent his money on just like going out and that kind of thing. And like, but then his mom is like, oh, well, like, he's trying. It's like, he said he isn't trying. So like, yeah. What do you say?
And like, I feel like in the battle of Ji-hoon versus language barrier is whooping Ji-hoon's ass, because either he is straight up saying the things that he is saying or he's not. So earlier when he talked about the job and she was like, why haven't you been getting another job? He said, and I'm quoting based on what we saw on the show, he kind of said that it gave him time to nap and it gave him free time. And then this episode, he was asked, like when they were discussing stuff and he was begging her to take him back and like everything, he said, I was being selfish and spending money only for me. And she was like, well, why? And then he said, because of long distance, I didn't take you seriously. And that's when she walked away from him. So
she got catatonic after that.
Yeah. Those are daggers that he's throwing her way. Big daggers. And like, that's what I've tried to figure out, is does he realize what he is saying? Because if he is, that's like devil behavior. Or is he saying something else that's like loosely like, oh, I didn't think it through. I didn't think hard enough. I wasn't like, I was being stupid, or like, I was taking it easy. I wasn't saving enough money. Is that what he's trying to say? Or is he just straight up like, oh, I didn't take you seriously?
No, even though what he was,
it's still bad. Yeah.
No matter what he was trying to say, what he said, what was translated was what was happening. He was not taking her seriously because she was all the way in another part of the world. You know, if she's not there, he's, you know, not on his mind, basically. Like, you know, she's a half a world away.
Yeah. Mina, do you see them lasting? Do you think they're going to be okay, or do you think this is doomed to fail?
I don't really see them lasting. I don't see many of these couples lasting, to be honest. But
no.
Yeah, I just think at some point, they could still be together for a few more years if Devin keeps doing this thing where she bounces back and forth between the U.S. and Korea. But like, Ji-hoon, he might step it up a little bit, but I still don't think that it's going to be enough. Especially like, if she is planning to move to Korea, then like, he kind of is going to have to be the more responsible one, because she doesn't really speak the language there. She can't really do much without him, as we saw like last week with that weird restaurant scene. So I don't know. I just think that I just don't understand what Devin's doing here. Like, she needs to kind of just like cut her losses or give Ji-hoon an honest chance. And then if that honest chance doesn't really turn out so great, she needs to just be done.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And I think ultimately her mom isn't happy with the moving situation. And in her final confessional of the episode, before we didn't see them again, she said that I'm doing this for our son. I want to give our son a second, another chance, because our son deserves it. So if that vocabulary says anything to me, it's that even at this point, they're on like thin ice. So we'll see what happens. But it started to look less and less likely.
I also think she kind of saved Ji-hoon's life by making sure Alicia was out of the house when he came by.
That was smart on her part. Yeah. He would have been torn to shreds.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Jason, where do you want to go next now that we've talked about Ji-hoon and Devin?
Let's go. Let me ask you guys a question.
Go for it.
Do you guys like mozzarella sticks?
Yes.
I like cheese sticks.
Because we had a cheese stick that was fried and set on fire this week.
With a side of eggs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Delicious. So we start out, you know, they're at Melissa's house. And the way Melissa must be a great cook, because he sounded like he was about to make love to that food. Like,
he's going crazy for eggs, for scrambled eggs. Like,
right. And like chorizo, which like you can get in the U.S. Like, it's not that foreign.
Yeah.
He was making some really weird sounds there. I do think it's clear that no matter what happens here, Tim is going to be paying for this, you know, indiscretion for the rest of his life if he's anywhere near Melissa. I just don't see where this is going to go. Like, this isn't going to go anywhere good. No. And I remember seeing, like, in the early episodes, you know, when he was at the bar or whatever with his friends, like, and the show, you know, the show likes to do the cliffhanger thing. Like, what did you guys think Tim had done before it was actually revealed? I thought he had, like, murdered some child or something, and he had to be like on the run, going to another country. Like, just the way that his friends were talking to him, like, I want to punch you for her. Like, I can't believe you did this. Like, I understand that cheating is a huge deal, but the way that they were treating it was just like he had committed some unforgivable crime that he was running from.
Yeah, they're definitely not happy with what he's done. So Tim, a.k.a. Cheese Stick, if we're going to stick with his given nickname, is obviously still paying the price for his infidelity against Melissa. And this is something that I've seen in many a household, not the infidelity, before we get too far. The whole, my mom knows everything, but my dad doesn't know everything. It's a big, big thing. In my world, in the Middle East, it's a very much like a, you're not telling dad everything, but your mom knows where all the skeletons are kind of thing. So that doesn't shock me at all. I like that Tim is really trying. I like that Cheese Stick is really putting himself out there, but I'm not ready to be like they're being harsh on him, because I have not seen anything wrong with Melissa. I don't think anything she's done is like criminal or like harsh or like dickish, unlike some of these other couples.
So everything we've seen about Melissa, like, everybody loves Melissa. Like,
his friends were mad at him.
Yes.
Like, that's an endorsement. Right.
Yeah, nobody seems to be on Tim's side or Cheese Stick's side, which, I mean, is understandable. He did cheat on her. Like, it's not, I don't know. And to them, it clearly is a very big deal. And it's the whole not telling the dad thing. I get it. But then it's kind of weird when the dad comes back at the end and, like, doesn't. Toast, and they were just talking about how he was cheating. I don't know. It's just so it's very yeah. And then at one point, the mom kind of starts the conversation with like, "Tim is very fat. Why?" It's like, okay, let's get this started.
Oh God, we're starting already, huh?
Right. He's just like, "I don't exercise," and she's just like, "You need to make time for this. You need to make time for everything." Like, so, like, the mom clearly does not like Tim in the slightest, and like, I don't blame her, but I just don't see how like. This is going to resolve itself, because Tim has like apologized and cried and all this kind of stuff. And that's not enough. They want to see like actions. So I think the only way for this to resolve is really time, but I don't know if that will really even help.
Because it's been about a year already though.
Yeah.
How much more time?
Like, exactly. I have no idea, but like, there just doesn't seem any kind of resolution to this. And like, Melissa is also very annoyed with him, understandably. And like, she has her mom in her ear constantly, like, oh yeah, this guy's no good, this guy's no good, this guy's no good. And like Melissa just the whole time, she just does not really smile or look happy at all. And it's just like, you guys, I don't know how much longer you're going to be able to pull this off, but it doesn't seem like it's gonna be that much longer.
Mom literally rolled her eyes when the dad was giving the toast. Like, she was not here. But no, I do have to give Tim some credit for trying to stick with the culture. Like, he seemed to be, you know, really good at the Spanish, and, you know, they seemed to really, you know, the dad loves him. Like, he obviously made a good impression before, you know, the cheating. And it's like, you know, and just looking at Tim, like, he knew what he was getting into going there. Like, before they got out of the car, he looks like he's just on his way to, like, an electric chair. Like, he knows what's in store for him.
Yeah, he looks even more cheese sticky.
Yeah, even more greasy. Like,
yeah. I think that this whole storyline is going to end with he's not going to keep his cool about all this. At some point, he's going to be like, this is unfair. Everyone's mean to me. And he's going to snap. I think he's going to snap before the season's over. It's just a matter of how big does he snap, or does he snap at the reunion or something? Because he is very calm for an angry cheese stick. And I feel like at some point, he's going to be like a jalapeno popper instead. And we'll just have to wait and see when that happens and the spicy side comes out. But for now, I got to say, this is probably the most dull couple on this The Other Way season. Because like, there's Kenny and Armando, who I even forgot about as part of the cast. But that's because they're amazing and I enjoy them and I'm rooting for them and they're not problematic. Whereas this couple is just, it's supposed to be like a dramatic thing, but they're not. But also, I want to root for them, but I also like Cheese Stick isn't really someone that I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for Melissa, but I'm not rooting for Cheese Stick. So.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. And then with that being said, we're left with only two couples because we skipped two this week. We only had four. I want to talk about, I feel like one of them we got more of. So I'll just skip to, I'll go to Jenny and Sumit and we can end with Biniam and Ari. So with Jenny and Sumit, they're having dinner with Sumit's brother, Amit. And the small talk was brutal for me. Let me just put that out there. Oh, this glass. Oh, yeah, it's very heavy. Like, this is the worst small talk in the planet.
I just have my notes. Awkward.
Yeah, I have, oof, the small talk in my notes. So then basically in the lead up to going to this restaurant, they talked about how, you know, Jenny's like, I'm happy he's filed for the divorce, but like still the family has to approve. And they're talking with the brother to see what's going on. And he's like, yeah, well, I talked to them. They still don't want you to be together. And they're talking about how it can impact the family's dignity, their social circle, the society around them. And Sumit gets angry about this, obviously. He's like, well, of course, I want to be happy, but like, why do these other people have to be happy too? It is a frustrating position for Sumit to be, especially because I didn't believe him that he was really getting divorced. I thought he was like, because it was like, you've just delayed this going to the lawyer thing too long. Now I'm starting to believe him. So now I feel bad for him and Jenny because it seems like there's still delays more and more along the way. And then basically their scene, their big moment in the scene is when the brother says, you should come home and meet mom and dad. So if we get a confrontation with her and the parents, I'm looking for that. I'm into that. I'm excited about that because I think the most out of nowhere blindside thing we've gotten with this couple is when they knocked on the door and they took Sumit that one time in the last season of The Other Way. So I'm intrigued on that. We'll see if it happens. But I want to know what you two think about this couple because they have a bit of a history here. Let's start with Mina. Tell me what you think about Jenny and Sumit.
Yeah. So with Jenny and Sumit, I just don't understand. Like I've said, like literally every single couple here, I don't understand why Jenny's still with Sumit. He has lied to her about like literally everything that he could lie to her about. Like if we remember correctly, like the way they met is that he was catfishing her and then he lied about being married and then the family came and took him and it was horrible. It was the worst day of her life. And like, it just seems like it's just one thing after another and the family, just this whole meeting that hopefully will happen in the next episode or two. I don't know how this is going to go well. I just feel like the family has this idea that Jenny should not be with Submit, and it's mostly due to her age, and she can't change her age, and she's only getting older. So, like, it just seems like his family is never going to really approve. And they said that in order for him to get married to Jenny, like, his parents are going to have to be okay with it to some extent. So it just seems like, I don't know. I can definitely see the season ending with Jenny, like, coming back to the U.S. again, and then maybe doing take three next season or something.
Yeah, I think there's going to be where this isn't the end of this couple at all. I mean, just the whole notion of, hey, this is a couple that's a successful catfish, like, is insane. It's like, mm-hmm. he was supposed to be someone else, but I saw him and I thought, okay. And then I went with him. So, like, that already is a hustle in its own. Then there's the age gap. Then there's the family. Then there's the her living in India, which is a new aspect to it. I think this is a couple we're going to see more and more of. And I think they genuinely like each other. So mm-hmm. I'm not shocked if we continue seeing them. But Jason, tell me, which one of them do you like? What's your feelings about them? What do you think? Are they going to last or no?
I waver back and forth on Sumit more than anybody else on either of these shows. Like, every episode I change, like, oh, he really likes her. Like, oh, no, not really. I don't know. And this episode, he made me kind of believe, you know, that he cared about Jenny. He wants to be with Jenny. As far as Jenny goes, I think it's, you know, on some of these people on these shows are really desperate for someone to love or someone to love them. And they just kind of look past every obstacle because they found someone. I mean, like Mina said, it was started by him catfishing her. Like, he's probably as surprised as anybody that Jenny is still trying to be with him. But, you know, and I kind of think he's really using his mom and dad as kind of a barrier to kind of hold things up. Because, you know, when Amit says, like, why don't you come meet mom and dad? His eyes get, like, so wide. And he's just like, no. Like, no. We don't need to do that. I already tried to talk to mom and dad. There's no point in that. So, you know, it's... I don't know what to think of Sumit most times because he just kind of puts obstacles in the way of actually getting married to Jenny.
He's
kind of stringing her along.
Yeah. Go for it.
I was just going to say, I think that I always question with him, like, what is his, like, end goal? Like, is his goal really to marry Jenny, or is his goal just to, like, have companionship with her for a little while and then however it ends? Like, it just seems like he hasn't really thought any of this through, like, from the beginning. He hasn't thought the relationship through very well. So I'm curious to see, like, what exactly he thinks is going to happen. And I think maybe the meeting with the parents will probably determine where their future goes.
I think he's upset because it's going to put a definitive end on this relationship one way or the other. It's either going to go well or it's going to go bad. He can't string it out any further than he has been so far, because that's like the last stop on this ride. Like, you're either going to go ahead or you're going to quit.
Yeah, because, and I think ultimately the biggest thing for me is he clearly is mad that the customs, the traditions, the cultural understanding of what a relationship is and should be do not fit them into the mold. They're not allowed to be together based on societal norms or whatever. But he's not mad at it enough to tell his parents, I'm doing this whether you like it or not. He's too scared to face them. So he's definitely too scared because he makes his little brother do the conversation for him. He, like, moved her in last season and, like, hid her away in, like, a tower like Rapunzel forever. So he's definitely isn't the confrontational type. And that's going to be a problem, because at some point you have to just be honest with them and bare your soul to your family and have them see that you're genuinely wanting this, because the more you be cagey with them, they're not going to respond to you. So we'll have to wait and see what he does. I do think he's going to go through enough pain through this process he already has gone through enough pain that he wants this, but he has a weird way of showing that he wants this. I'll be honest with you. He needs to do more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we're down to the last one. And that is Biniam and Ari. Mina, what do you think of this couple?
I feel like Ari, she doesn't really say anything on the show. I feel like Ari has probably grown up where her mom has done most of the talking for her, because her mom seems to be the type to ask everybody every little question. Like, she's pretty Karen-like. So I don't know, because during this, the scene that we see at the nightclub with Binium dancing with his ex slash dance partner, the mom is like, clear. Like, first of all, she asks right off the jump, how much do you think you can make in a club like this? And like, Ari's like, I have no idea. Why don't you ask him? And it's like, Ari, like, you need to know, like, how much money you're going to have when you live here. Like, you, if you're going to stay here long term, you need to know these things.
Yeah.
But I don't know. And then, like, just the mom, she said several times, like, comments like, oh, that dance partner is really cute. Oh, they have great chemistry. Like, ooh, look at them. Like, and it's like, what is, like, it's the mom. I think the mom's goal is to just get Ari back to America as soon as possible, hopefully before 100%. She has a baby.
She's and like Ari, a more efficient Debbie, like a more, yes, like, it's like more like she's like a higher tier level of sneaky with the jabs and the, like, the little bit of a nudge towards bringing her back than Debbie is, for sure.
Debbie is blunt. Janice tries to slide in like an assassin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she even says to Binium, like, after he's done dancing, she's like, I didn't know you had talent. It's like, what? Like, thank you? Like, what do you say to that? Like, what did she think he was going to do? Like, go up there and, like, do, like, the Napoleon Dynamite dance or something? Like, I just don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know what she expected. The dance scene was very fun. Notes. Damn. I was awake till late last night. Sorry. All those feeds, man. Damn. I wrote, oh my God, the drums. I enjoyed the dancing. That was fun. I thought this was a fun scene altogether. I hadn't thought of it the way you put it, Mina, but the whole, like, Janice, the mom, is literally the mouthpiece for her daughter and herself, and just takes over every conversation. She doesn't want Ari to stay in Ethiopia. There's no way she's gonna sign off on this, and she's just finding and trying new ways to, like, push it in there and cause seeds of doubt. Jason, do you think that when the season ends they're gonna be in Ethiopia, or do you think Janice is gonna be successful in her extraction mission to take Ari out back to the States?
I think Ari's going to stay in Ethiopia for a while. And I think the issue is, like, Ari strikes me as a, you know, spoiled rich kid that has traveled the world on her parents' dime. And until now, when she got pregnant, she hasn't really had to worry about much of anything. And she's now faced with making tough decisions and getting tough situations. Like, having the baby in Ethiopia while they toured the hospital, and the hospital was nice. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of risks there. Like, you know, you have to choose between hospital in America and hospital in Ethiopia. You would think you would choose the one in America, but I just don't think she has enough wisdom and experience that she just wants to do what she wants to do. And I think she'll stay in Ethiopia because I think that Janice might be too scared to pull the, you know, support. Because I think no matter what, as much as they talk about babies, you know, occupation and money and things, I don't think Janice and Ari's father are going to let her stay in those rundown apartments. I think they're going to be funding their life.
Yeah, that seems like where we're headed, because I don't think, because at some point the mom has to leave Ethiopia. Like, she has to get back to her normal life. So, like, is she really going to leave her with these apartments that she thinks are, like, subpar apartments? I think that eventually, because Ari's dad is a doctor, so it's not like they can't afford to help them out a little bit.
Right.
So I think that's where we're going. And as far as, like, where they end up, I think we saw, like, in the preview for, like, the season that Ari and Janice, like, in an Ethiopian hospital room, like, her having the baby, I think. So I think she does end up having the baby in Ethiopia, but...
Yeah, I just don't know how far after that.
Yeah, I just don't know how long she ends up staying there, because, well, if they have a newborn, they probably can't really travel that easy and stuff, so...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I guess we'll see.
I think Janice's fear is that if she says to Ari, like, hey, if you choose to stay here, I'm not going to support you, that Ari will say, all right, fine. Don't support me. I'll stay here.
I don't think she wants that. I don't think she's willing to let that happen to Ari. So she'll still keep paying and the bluff will be called. I do agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. She's not going to let her baby just live in slums. So I think she'll be.
She'll let baby live in slums, but she won't let her daughter live in slums.
we'll see, I guess.
What did you guys think of his family? I think his family really kind of turned the tables and were like, whoa, what are Ari's intentions? Like, what if she wants to take the baby to the United States? What's going to happen then?
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting how they turned the tables on her like that.
I liked meeting the family. I liked learning about the Gursha tradition. And you know what? For all the smack we're talking about Janice and her and her intentions with what she wants with Ari, I love that she got involved with the tradition. I love that she took the food out of got fed and followed through with it completely. She looked at when they said it's like raw meat and they pan to it, I was like, she's going to flip out. She's a nurse. She's going to lose her mind. But she indulged, and I loved every bit of that. I love seeing moments like that on TV. So I was very happy, and I want to give her credit there for sure.
Well, I want to make it clear. I like Janice, and I'm on Janice's side. If I was in Janice's position, I'd probably try to do the same things. I mean,
yeah, she comes across as very controlling, but at the same time, if Ari is not going to get this information herself, then her mom's got to be the one to do it. So she comes across as not the greatest sometimes, but I mean, she's concerned for her daughter, and that's what really drives all of her question asking and all of her careness.
And she made Ari think too, with baby's lipstick story.
Oh my god,
that brought up a lot of truths. I think to Ari, what do you mean you're going to try to hide it? That was crazy.
It's a red flag right there.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not even there, and I wasn't dating you, and I'm skeptical on this lipstick story that you have. No stain should take 3 hours to take out, especially if it's lipstick. And at that point, come on, bro.
I had this image in my head of him furiously scrubbing it at his.
Yeah,
sink.
At some point you would have caused a tear in the shirt because you've been trying to take it off for 3 hours. So there's no way that's a thing. Yeah, I think so. Ultimately, Jason, what you're saying is, on a scale of low to Debbie to to Chuck to Janice, you would want to be more of the Janice.
I think I would want to be a low, I don't want to have to step in, but if I step in, it's not going to be good. But I think I would be more of a Janice, trying to get in there and be like, well, what did you think about this? What about this? What about that? I think that's what I would end up being like.
And yeah, I mean, it's better than the alternatives of Chuck. you don't want to be a Chuck for Debbie.
Yeah. Sure. No, with those options, there's definitely not another good direction to go to. But this kind of wraps up the conversation here. Do you have anything else you want to share, Mina or Jason, any other stuff about the episodes that we haven't talked about?
Can we touch on Kenny and Armando and Brittany and Yazan?
Yeah, sure, we can do that. About the preview?
Yeah, as far as Kenny goes, I'm pretty convinced that Kenny is a vampire and that he wants Armando for his young blood. I don't know.
He's I've said this before, I'll say it again. He looks incredible for 57.
Yes.
He looks like 20. He looks younger than I am.
I couldn't believe it when they showed his age on the show. I was like, what?
Yeah. I'm rooting. Yeah, don't buy it?
No, I mean he has 20 something year old kids. He has to be in his 50s, but that is a good gene pool right there.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot of work to look like that though.
For sure. Yeah, I think he's even posted that he has this very in-depth ritual with his skin, which is the least surprising thing. So
when he was packing, they showed his big bag of lotions and conditioners and all that stuff.
Skincare routine out of 10. Mina, what is your thoughts? Because you're not going to get to talk about them, at least for a while here. What are your thoughts about Brittany and Yazan, which I'm kind of disappointed we didn't get to talk about today?
I know, my two favorite couples from the other way. Come on. Brittany and Yazan, talk about couples that should not be together. They are the biggest example of that. I mean, they just have very clear cultural differences, and neither of them seems willing to budge on them in the slightest. And especially in the preview, we see Yazan that's telling her that she has to convert. And like, she's like, I didn't think that was a thing. Like, I don't have to. And it's like, all right, we've been having this conversation for a while now. Like, maybe this is not the best relationship for either of you. But also I see why they're just now having these conversations, because if we think back to like the like first or second episode where they were on Skype and Brittany was just like, Yazan tried to talk about something serious and Brittany was just like, yeah, I love your beard.
That's what happens every time they talk.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, like I see why they got in this situation. So I don't really feel bad. Well, I feel a little bit bad for Brittany given that scene that we saw. I just feel bad that she was like completely like torn apart in a different language that she like, I just putting myself in that situation, I would just have a breakdown. So, but I don't know. I think that they kind of need to just cut their losses, but maybe wait a little bit so we can see some more drama on the show first.
Yeah.
I kind of think Brittany had this thought of like, you know, I think she wanted to be on the show for one. Okay. I think that's a big part of it. And she found this guy Yazan. And she went over, she thought she was going to go over there and be like, well, I'm going to do things my way and this mm-hmm. and that, this and that. And I think she got in for a really rude awakening when she got there. And I don't think she thought it is what she thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I think that a lot of these couples, specifically them, it's very clear, like, you know, Devin and Jihoon kind of the same thing, where they clearly did not discuss what the expectations were and what the reality was before they got there. Like, it's very clear that Yazan
or even do
wants
a cursory Google search. Like, what are the customs like? What are things like there? Like, just a 5-minute session on Google will tell you a lot.
Exactly. Yeah. And then if it's something that you haven't seen, like, for example, if she searches it and it's like, oh, it's customary in this country that you would convert to their religion. It's like you ask the partner, you're like, hey, so would you expect me to convert? And then it's an easy yes or no. And then it's like, okay, well, now I know at least, and I can adjust my expectations or my thought process, because he wants her to convert very clearly from early on. He wants her to be someone she is not, someone who this is not in the fiber of her being. And she doesn't want that. It's not like she's willing to do it for him. She just doesn't want to be a part of that either. So it's like, you guys are doomed to fail, so I do not understand what you are doing here.
And
it's very hard.
I think he told her that, and she was just like, whatever. I'm going to, you know, well, when I get there, I'll convince him not to, you know, that I can do things my way. But he's not budging. Like, neither of them are budging, and it's a big problem.
Yeah, and then the parents were under the impression that, like, Brittany was going to get to Jordan. They would get married right away, which, good thing that didn't happen. But it just seems like there's a lot of miscommunication going on. And it's probably partially because like Brittany's unwilling to talk about anything more than like your beard looks cute. And like also Yazan is like telling his parents things that are like maybe not completely honest. So it just seems like there's a lot of miscommunication and it just doesn't seem like there's like a good ending to this story.
And this is all before she tells him that she's still married.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that about wraps this up. Thank you so much, the two of you, for being here. I had a lot of fun talking about this. And you've got me excited on some couples that I didn't care about. I'm now going to have in my mind a ranking of the parents moving forward. And just thank you both for being here. I'll start with you, Jason. Where can people find you? Do you have any plugs? Any final thoughts?
So I do have a Twitter. I don't use it a lot. If people start following me from this, maybe I'll just, you know, I'll get more active on it. But my Twitter is JR1085. That's JAYR1085. This was a lot of fun. You know, this is my first, you know, debut on our half for anything. So it was a lot of fun to talk to you guys about it. And this is one of my favorite shows. So I was happy to talk about it.
And Mina, where can people find you and what are you up to? And any final words?
Yeah, so I also have a very similar Twitter to Jason in that because I don't really have that many followers, I don't really do much. But if you'd like to follow me, it's at Mina W, so ITSMINAW. It's just been great to talk about 90 Day Fiancé. It's my favorite trash television show, and I can't wait to see how the season turns out. And I appreciate you having me on here.
I'm very happy that I got to be a part of the debut here. This has been, honestly, like this experience for me has been a lot of fun because I'm getting to know so many amazing people that I would not have talked to before. And we get to talk about 90 Day Fiancé. And the beauty of talking about this show is it is at times serious, but at times we're being serious about possibly the dumbest stuff. And it's so, so delicious. So I thank both of you for indulging me in this Hot Mess Express. If you would like to leave a rating or a review of this podcast, please go to www.robbazawebsite.com/90dayfiance, no space. And yeah, that we have the Apple feed up now, and you can leave the reviews there. You can subscribe to that and you get all the 90 day content exclusively. Otherwise, you can still subscribe to the Rehap Ups feed and you can get the steady stream of them there as well. It's been a fun day from Jason, Mina, and myself. We will catch you on the Hot Mess Express next week. Until then, take care and don't be a Debbie. Bye.